Federal Affairs Committee agenda, March 16, 1967, SJR 22, expresses legislative recognition of climate centennial celebration scheduled during summer of 19...
I have to prove that he said in so many words no. A good instrument.
No.
The mere fact that he presented it and tendered it was sufficient to show that there was an uttering. Quietly, I think you're saying it in there. Now, New York just says, with knowledge that it is forged and with intent to defraud, deceive, or injure another, he utters or possesses a forged instrument. Now, none of these others define uttering. Now, I was trying to add something. Maybe I just created a problem by trying to define uttering.
I think you got it.
But... You know, uttering is a rather antique, antiquated word that, you know, it doesn't have any set, clear definition. Some of the cases said, well, you don't have to pass the instrument, it doesn't have to be negotiating to have an uttering. So what I was trying to do was formulate a definition that would encompass just about anything you might do with a written instrument, presenting it or tendering it.
Take a look at that line, so what she's making, and get rid of this K-U-P-E-F, whatever they have on a rap sheet. The abbreviated knowing and the uttering and posting before it's saying K-U-P-E-F, knowing it to be false.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen that? I figure out what the rap is. It's not in the portrait.
Michigan doesn't have uttering.
We got away from it. We should try to in Lake County on our guidance for forgery for uttering. We just call it presenting a forged check.
PFC.
PFC. What does that mean?
I don't know what they would call it over here. But I'm sure they would come up with some type of appropriate shorthand abbreviation. Well, I don't know, John. I can't say I can really answer your question, although it's a I thought I had the bases covered here, but there may be a...
Well, now, do you also intend to encompass the facing of a written instrument? Or money, for example, within, I guess, falsely altering the provision. So, we have a specific statute on that. Also, we probably reached the point of diminishing returns as far as considering.
I think we're doing a darn thing here.
So I'm going to entertain a motion to adjourn and.
I so move.
And having been duly moved, seconded, passed, it is hereby declared that this here meeting now and forevermore is adjourned. Try again another.
I'd like to inquire, has the name of Klamath Falls ever really officially been changed from Lakeville, or will this be the Lakeville Centennial, or
No, my father helped change the name, as I understand, from Lakeville to Klamath Falls. That's when we had falls there, and we were becoming a metropolitan area, a big trading center, and the name of Lakeville wasn't quite dignified enough for the community, so they changed it then to Klamath Falls.
You know, the help they had in changing the name, that's why I wondered if it was legally established, right?
Yeah.
Well, the statute of limitations has run against it.
I have a friend. I'm a little bit concerned about another matter here.
All right, go ahead.
Page 7, you're apparently...
Page 7?
You mean line 7, page 2.
Line 7, page 2.
Oh,
from
yeah.
Ferry to Freeway.
Yeah, that's...
Has that been copyrighted? Is there any chance that somebody might run away with that slogan before you have a chance to use it?
Well, it's all right. We're generous people, you know, about down there, and someone would want it, but he let them have it.
I just wondered if you'd copyrighted the slogan.
I don't know, really, but I'm just sure that, you know, we're open-hearted.
Well, if you're not concerned, I'm not.
Mr. Chairman, one more question.
Yes.
On line 7. The word ferry, is that spelled right?
I just wondered if someone was going to say that.
Don't harass the witness now. Let's knock that off. I don't know.
I usually avoided that line.
No, let's don't do that. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I'm concerned about where they got this ferry.
I think we're past story. They had some ferries up there that had to do something about it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the last one is still down there, and I don't know if that Link River would handle it. But if you're going to get it, I'd suggest they be working on it, because it's also been sort of designated for Vietnam.
Well,
so there's two serious areas here to consider.
We need to bring it in with the Indians down there before it goes to Vietnam.
I declare...
August 9th, I believe that was the last meeting where we were all present.
Will there be approved mail?
Mr. Chandler has moved that they be approved as read.
I second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Now, we had a meeting on the 23rd of September, and Ed and I were here. We had a hang up at the last minute, so we got a substitute, and we're very, very happy to report that after 6 meetings of fighting with Chandler and Spalding, Ed and I finally passed the arson draft.
You want that in a minute?
No, strike that.
Don't put it quite that way.
In any event, I think probably, I don't think it's necessary to read you for this, but Don, maybe you could just briefly relate what we did. I think certainly briefly insofar as our concern, and then we can talk for a little bit about what we did on the portrait, because I thought that it was very helpful to Ed and I last time when we did go over the minutes at the beginning.
Well, do you want to go through the minutes of the 23rd? Is that what you're talking
about? I know. I don't think it's necessary to.
Well, I read the minutes. Now, my approval of minutes doesn't indicate any approval of what you fellows did the last time.
Well, you didn't go to the prevailing side, so you can't move your main over the question.
My city of stand-in.
Oh. I'm glad to know that he was your stand-in.
Important to the definition of protected property. pertinent parts of the minutes of the 23rd, beginning on page 5, indicates what we did. Well, actually, at the beginning of the bottom of page 4, I guess, section 1 of preliminary draft number 3 was adopted as prepared without further amendment. Section 2, with respect to negligent burning, was adopted by the subcommittee. Section 3, really are somewhat repetitious, I think.
which are?
Well, 080 and 07 are the present statutes.
How are we going to attack him, this thing that's probably yet this is beyond the sight of play. We don't have to worry about anything. I noticed that looking over the FBI uniform crime statistics, a lot of increase in certain types of crime comes because you've got an arbitrary definition of what amount of stolen or amount of damage or amount of something else, and then a fixed dollar amount, which doesn't adequately reflect the lessening value of a dollar or the greater cost of the things involved. They make it a major crime, for example, to steal anything with a value of over $50. Or when I started those UCC statistics umpteen years ago, 30 years ago, that was fine, but now, that's $50, you know, you can steal a radio out of a car, which isn't, and run double that without any trouble. You can steal an awful lot of things that come to $50, and I would hate to see us get in a position where we're deciding on an amount somewhere along the line, or a fixed amount of damage involved in something, and then suddenly discover that we've 10 years from now we've made everybody a mistake. The violator of the statute is because the amount involved is not worth much to use to be.
Well, the subcommittee on classification of crime is going to set the amount of the line of demarcation between grand and petty larceny, and that's something that's going to have to be done. But if I'm correct, Don, and correct me if I'm not, the trend seems to be to raise this, like, 75 is already now 100, or...
Been 75 for...
Well, $75 from over a few years ago, I
was locked
into two saddle horses would still be below $75. You might get hung, but as far as value is concerned, I bought my first automobile for $35 and ran it for 2 years in high school. Now, you get an equivalent car, you're going to pay $300 or $400.
Well, pretty darn
bone horse, it isn't worth $200.
But here the thought is that it doesn't work to have any specified sum because of the change in the value of the dollar from year to year.
Either that or I'm going to have a specified amount because I'm going to have something specific to create the crime, I guess. I don't think you can leave it up to the determination of each judge and each jury to decide, or the district attorney or whoever it is, to decide what the degree of crime is. But is there any way that some automatic limit increase could be carried into that?
I'd be near my
like tying it in with the cost of living
index. Yeah, the cost of living index.
Or that some worker knowing about the steal, he wouldn't know about that.
No, which administration was entirely.
But of course,
the interest rate on the national debt.
Aside from that, in many, many instances, it's a moot question because, like we were talking about earlier, you have crimes like larceny in the store, larceny for a person, larceny in a building, where the amount doesn't make any difference. The same is true with respect to there is a line of demarcation in our present law as far as NSF check and check felonies are concerned. That's something we're going to be talking about shortly, but I'm glad the province of the other subcommittee to make the primary decision on this, because I think what you're saying has a lot of validity, but I don't know how we're going to get over how.
I don't know how we're going to do it. I don't know what
you're doing.
You can get them, you didn't have to be complicated. Formula, the state would have to prove the formula.
Well, yeah, and then there, of course, is a problem that you run into every legislative session on so many different areas of legislation where you want to tie the state law to some federal index or something, like in some of the tax laws, and the experts come back and say, well, you can't do this.
You've all met Justice Sloan, the State Board of Education's favorite judge, haven't you?
We're very happy to have Justice Sloan here today, and wanted to know that we're on about page 6 of the minutes of September 23rd. Well, moving from there, if neither of our regular members have any objections to the adoption that was made by the ad hoc committee last month, I think it probably would be in order for the records to be completely straight for a motion approving the draft on our second preliminary draft number 3 on arson as amended at the September 23rd meeting be approved. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. Now, going to page 6.
Of the minutes?
Of the minutes. We got into forgery, and we started something at the last meeting, and that is that we went over the minutes, and it kind of tuned the committee in to where we left off before, and I think it made our work a lot easier. So Don, why don't you pick up there, and I'll backstop you if you run out of gas.
All right. Forgery and related offenses, preliminary draft number 1, September 68. Well, I've informed the committee that preliminary draft number 1 of forgery and related offenses contained the basic forgery sections, but related to supplemented by related fraud crimes, including credit cards, bank checks, etc. Call attention to Article 224 of the Model Penal Code, which entitled this chapter forgery and fraudulent practices and related to subjects covered under that article. While the Oregon Code may or may not ultimately contain comparable provisions, except the draft and consideration of more narrowly like the New York Combined Penal Code than the Model Penal Code. He noted that the Model Penal Code commentary pointed out that if the Penal Code contained broad theft statutes, forgery provisions could probably be eliminated as a separate crime. But because the concept of forgery was so ingrained into law, because it was such a traditional crime, and because of the nature of forgery had come to have certain accepted well-defined meanings, felt it would be difficult to eliminate the crime of forgery as such. We went into definitions under Section 1. Definition section defined the term written instrument in broad terms to include almost everything that could possibly be the subject of a forgery. The definition of draft is derived from the New York Code. The Model Penal Code definition is similar, except it uses the term writing instead of written instrument. I call attention to the commentary on page 2 of the draft, which pointed out the distinctions in the terms defined in Section 1. Now, distinctions are made between the terms complete written instrument, now these are still on definitions, and incomplete written instrument. Particularly important are the terms falsely made, falsely complete, or falsely altered, which collectively constitute the crime of forgery.
Are those definitions intended to be to allow us to make differentiation and degree of the crime? That's the reason for the difference between written instrument, complete written instrument, and incomplete written instrument.
No, as to, it won't make any difference with respect to the degree of the crime, but it will make a difference in defining what kind of an act will constitute forgery. In other words, if it's forgery, whether it's forgery by completing an incomplete written instrument or falsely made a written instrument, it would still constitute forgery. The only differentiation that would be made in degree would be because of the nature of the instrument, and not the manner in which it was forgery.
Is it necessary then to have that one definition be drawn broadly enough to cover complete, incomplete, uncompleted written instruments?
Well,
I've seen a poor jury.
Yeah, I think you could have a single statement encompassing all these things. because these are to either falsely to falsely make a written instrument, or to falsely alter it, or to you either make it or you alter it, constitutes forgery. And but there, it's not always clear as to what it takes to complete the transaction in which you committed a crime. And until you get into situations, I think, where you have a fictitious name used, this type of thing. In other words, I think that the definitions which distinguish between falsely making and falsely completing would make for clear instructions to the jury, so they would know that if they're informed in instructions that, for example, the falsely complete means you transform by adding or inserting new matter onto an instrument that was incomplete to start with. But this is forgery, and they have said they have a check case that the check wasn't complete on its face, and the defendant has inserted something.
Would it be a lesser degree of crime to take a payroll check that had been half made out, and which I suppose would be an incomplete written instrument, and complete it, and it would be to take one that was a completed instrument and alter it?
No, it wouldn't be a lesser degree. It'd still be the same degree of crime if that kind of instrument, check, but under our graph, would be a forgery in the first degree. It would still be a forgery in the first degree, whether it was written out in its entirety by the forger or it was just falsely altered by the forger. It wouldn't make any difference.
Well, the model penal code reaches the objection that Bond raises by using writing. Is this not true, rather than the three forms of written instrument in his definition?
No, I don't think so. No, I think that's a different question. Because our written instrument definition under subsection 1 in preliminary draft number 1, written, that's the basic definition of the type of instrument that would be the subject of the forgery. And that is substantially the same as the definition of writing in the model penal code. The kind of act that is committed with respect to this instrument is then, we also then go ahead and distinguish between a complete instrument and an incomplete instrument. But then we go on, and this is the crux of it as far as the acts that would constitute forgery, and those fall under subsections 4, 5, and 6.
Spelled it out a great deal of specificity. I don't think that
question.
For its specific offenses. And the offenses. But the ways in which you can commit the offense are spelled out.
More so than our present. And incidentally, we have copies of the criminal code for us to take home now. Those of us that don't have them, which will help us. Well, finally, we might go ahead, John. We'll doubtless we get back to this when we start going over the definitions.
Okay. Now, Chairman Burns asked why the phrase evidence of value had been used in section 1.1 rather than evidence of debt as employed in ORS 165.10. Left it fine if he didn't think of money as evidence of debt. As used in ORS 165.10, evidence of debt was employed in connection with checks, receipts, etc. You know that the model penal code used the term symbols of value. In section 2, forgery in the second degree. The draft contains two ascending degrees of the crime of forgery, while ORS now contains only one degree of forgery, but sets forth many related crimes which amount to varying degrees of forgery. Section 2.2 differed from both New York and the Michigan draft, and that proposed draft equated uttering with the forging of the check, and in that respect retained the provisions of existing law. Criminal possession of forged instruments would be a lesser crime than the uttering or forging of an instrument. Called attention to the ORS section set forth on pages 5 and 6 of the draft listing crimes which sound forgery. Paragraph C and page 5. And you can see that there are many related provisions which are framed in terms of counterfeiting or forgery, which in effect amount to really I think lesser degrees of forgery. Our basic sections, of course, are 165.105, 165.110, and 165.115. Chairman Burns read his definition of utter on page 2 of the draft, followed by subsection 2 of section 2 on page 4. He noted that ORS 165.115 said, knowingly utters or publishes is true and genuine. The question whether the element of purporting the instrument to be true and genuine had been omitted from definition. Mr. Platt replied the other codes did not define utter, and that he might have created problems by including that definition. Chairman Burns expressed the view that utter should be defined. Uttering, Mr. Platt said, was an ancient term without a clear definition. Some of the cases say that the constitution must be uttered and attempted to formulate a definition to encompass most anything that could be done with the written instrument. And the definition that I propose for utter is on page 2 of the draft, under sub 7. To utter a written instrument means to issue, deliver, publish, circulate, disseminate, transfer, or tender a written instrument to another. Chairman Burns asked why, for an example, the type of instrument that would qualify under second degree forgery, and was told that to falsify a diploma or to forge a railroad ticket would be examples of the type of crime that would fall under section 2. Representative Elder asked the act would need to be one from which the act would derive a monetary benefit and exceed the negative decline. The collateral added that an attempt to defraud would have to be present. The main purpose of section 2, he said, was to cover a number of crimes listed on pages 5 and 6 of the draft, such as forging railroad tickets, counterfeiting the label, counterfeiting the serial number, etc. Section 3, forgery in the first degree. Forgery in the first degree, what said was a restatement of forgery in the second degree. The crime was aggravated if it involved one of the written instruments enumerated in section 3. Burns pointed out that coins and money were not enumerated in section 3, whereas they were included in both New York and model penal code. Mr. Platt replied that there was no reason why coins and money could not be included if the subcommittee wished to do so, but he thought the definition of section 1.1 article constituting a symbol or evidence of value was broad enough to include coins and money. Chairman Burns said that if the draft meant that coins were included in the subject of forgery, actually the proposal was saying that counterfeiting was forgery. Mr. Platt replied he thought a strong argument could be made to omit money and coins from the Oregon statute on the subject was adequately covered by federal statutes. From a prosecutor prosecution standpoint, might be advisable to have it in the code, but it probably would seldom be used. Reply to a question from Chairman Burns, Blood explained that a bad check would fall under forgery in the first degree, Section 3.3, because it would be a commercial instrument. Blood pointed out the main difference between the Model Penal Code and the New York Code, as opposed to the proposed Oregon statute, was that in New York, in the Model Penal Code, it was forgery in the first degree if the crime was of the type described in subsection 1 or 2 of Section 3. The present Oregon law, the punishment was the same for all the acts set forth in Section 3. He believed it would do less violence to existing law if this concept were retained. From a policy standpoint, he said, it was difficult to say that one would do more damage to the public than the other, and he had therefore decided to stay with what appeared to be the present legislative intent, make the crimes in subsection 1 through 5 equally severe. The language of the draft, he said, was not identical to 165.105. It was analogous, and the court changed the intent was to make it broader. Reported that nothing contained in the present law had been omitted, and some new language had been added, namely in subsections 1 and 2. Chairman Burns agreed that there was no compelling necessity to make the distinction contained in the New York Code with respect to the forging of security, stocks, bonds, etc. New York said we have a problem with these instruments, which would be peculiar to that area because of the number of stock exchanges located there. The chairman pointed out that the flat draft survey of land is set forth in ORS 165.105 had been omitted from the draft, thought this might not be advisable in view of the land speculations which have been taking place recently. Well, I said he thought the phraseology would be covered by Section 3.3, but the chairman expressed some doubt that this was the case. If the flat draft or survey were attached to a title, it would be covered, he said, but it's conceived of other instances where the documents would be separated from the title. And that was in the substance of our discussion on the provisions of the draft. It's a... I think basically it retains pretty much what we have already. There are a couple of other comments I'd like to make on this. I pointed out on starting page 6 of the draft of the commentary with respect to whether the crimes of forgery and uttering are separate distinct offenses in Oregon. There are two cases, State versus Swain and Doherty versus Gladden. And
where do you pick those?
This is on page 6 and 7 of the draft.
Oh.
And now, under the Swain case, the court had held that forging an instrument and uttering were separate, distinct crimes. However, that was a 1921 case, and then in 1959 under the Dowry case, the court held that the statute clearly states for a single crime, which could be committed by either forgery or uttering or both. The court distinguished the Swank case, saying that the discussion therein of forgery and uttering in separate offenses was in connection with OCLA 23, 561, 562, and applied only to the forging or uttering of an instrument purporting to be executed by a sovereign entity. And Professor Lindy had raised the question in 1959 as to whether or not these two cases leave us with a possible situation in which might be forgery and uttering if the instrument purports to have sovereign backing but a single crime otherwise. Now the draft, at least the intent of the draft, would be to clarify this point by making forgery a single crime uttering would just be one matter which you commit the crime of forgery. I think that would clear that question up.
Don, first, let's approve the minutes. Are there any objections or corrections to the minutes? If not, then they'll stand approved. We simply reviewed the draft, didn't endeavor to make, we raised some questions, as you see, but we didn't make any recommendations for changes.
I think it's probably in order then. If you complete what you want to say, that we'll start with section one and go.
Yeah, well, I have nothing further to say at this point. As far as the overall draft is concerned, I think person plowing through it and see what
the
questions come up on.
Well, then going to section one, we pick the definitions out of section one, practically verbatim. Or is it completely verbatim from the New York Penal Code?
With the exception of the definition of
force degree.
Of utter.
Make my memory on how new the New York Penal Code is.
It was enacted in 65. It was amended in 1967.
3 years of wear and tear.
Yeah, and we've recently received the pocket parts to the New York Code. There aren't any cases under forgery. There's one case cited under the new section, but it was prosecuted under their old law. So it's still new enough. So there isn't much law, much case law interpreting. I think that some examples that New York people point out, I think might help, particularly with respect to the bond question on why we have these distinctions between the written. They give some examples, some hypothetical situations. Illustrate how forgery can be committed by doing the various acts. Now, the first one, E an employee simulating the handwriting of both T and P and not having the authority of either draws up in its entirety a purportedly authentic corporate check payable to himself and tries to cash it. E has falsely made a complete remission. Then the second hypothetical, E, simulating T's handwriting, draws an uncompleted check payable to himself in T's customary manner, and impliedly representing it as T's act, presents it to P for his signature as drawer. E has falsely made an incomplete remission. Third example, E properly obtains his uncompleted salary check from T, but fearing that P will not sign it, himself writes in P's purported signature as drawer and tries to cash the check. E has falsely completed an incomplete written instrument. Four, E properly obtains his uncompleted check from P and properly obtains P's signature as drawer, but thereafter raises the amount of the check and tries to cash it. E has falsely altered a complete written instrument. Five, E properly obtains his uncompleted check from P, but then raises the amount and presents it to P for his signature as drawn. E has falsely altered an incomplete written instrument.
So he can't just cause him to be in trouble.
Yeah, he is in trouble. They go on to say, although not fully evident from the foregoing illustrations, the five indicated concepts or kinds of acts seem to embrace every true form of forgery. Accordingly, the crime of forgery is defined in terms of falsely making, completing, or altering a written instrument. Then subdivision 7, which is our subdivision 8, labeling as forged an instrument falling within the foregoing definition, provides a compact term for use in subsequent provisions.
Okay.
I don't want to clear it up at all or not.
Well, it seems to me that when you get down to places like 7 and 8, which is really where we create the crime, as far as definitions are concerned.
Well, not really.
No, as far as the definition part is concerned here. One is the
passing, the definition of a passing or the using of a thing, and the other is the defining what a forged instrument is. And we say it's any written instrument which has been made falsely or falsely completed or falsely altered. I can see the need for the differentiation between falsely making, falsely completing, and falsely altering. But somewhere I'm lost on the need to create two or three different kinds of written instruments. A written instrument later in the draft we define the types of written instruments which create varying degrees of the crime. I just wonder if we're not, wouldn't we somewhat, or at least as well off, maybe better off with a simpler and one-shot definition of what a written instrument is. If we just use one by itself, wouldn't that any paper, any document, any instrument, any article contain written or printed matter or the equivalent thereof, which would cover trademarks and everything else, used for the purpose of reciting, embodying, conveying, or recording information, or constituting a similar evidence of value, right, privilege, or identification, which is capable of being used to the advantage or disadvantage of some person. Now that's a pretty broad definition that covers a lot of things.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that these definitions are interrelated in that as we get down, say, into 4, 5, and 6, you see that we employ these terms. We employ the terms incomplete written instrument. In these other definitions, and then in 6 we refer to either a complete or incomplete written instrument. And
I suspect that this New York law is written this way because they've been quite a bit of loophole jumping in the past there, and they just decided to get very specific to cover all of the outs and the dodges that have been used in the past. Isn't that correct?
I admit that I'm in a poor position to argue both with this committee and the New York committee.
Now, could it be possible that if we were to eliminate 2 and 3, complete and incomplete, and use only one, I think as you perhaps suggested, that then an argument could be made on behalf of a defendant that he isn't really guilty of forgery because this particular instrument that he signed was not a complete written instrument. I mean, I don't know. I wonder if that's a rationale.
So there he is waving at the court, his attorney, and he says, see, he didn't write an instrument. He only started to, and then he had a change of heart.
He didn't want the other guy's shapes around.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't take care of that,
buddy. Complete or incomplete?
The second signature was the signature was completed was done by someone.
Well, it seems to me that if we're trying to make a comprehensive code, that when we employ a term, if there's any question about it, I think it's desirable to define what we're talking about. And I think if we just use the terminology, a complete, or say it's a crime to forge an instrument, or falsely make or alter instrument, whether complete or incomplete, that we're then putting in a term which
needs defining. I mean, what do we mean by incomplete? Is it
well, I can see the I can see the second second sentence in two. An endorsement, attestation, acknowledgement, or other similar signatures or statements deemed both a complete written instrument in itself and a part of the main instrument in which it is contained or to which it attaches. You're tightening things up there. Maybe. My actual inclination is to go along with Bob Chandler and say, Dale, let's kick out, let's consolidate these three sections into one concise statement that we're really talking about the same thing, a written instrument. But I wonder if
could you put a clause in sub one saying it's a written instrument, whether it's complete, incomplete, falsely made, or falsely completed, or falsely altered?
Well, they
cover that in just one clause.
I guess what I read, you didn't put in, did you? I just read out loud an endorsement attestation. I didn't mean it.
Under complete written instrument?
Penal Code, it's much simpler. It's a person's guilty of forgery if with purpose to defraud or what am I doing? 2.3.
Yeah, my definition is under 2 is same as Michigan's rather than New York's.
There seems to be quite a radical departure, Don, from the model penal code approach and the New York approach on the definition of sexual forgery.
I don't think so. Now, what do you mean the definition?
Oh, look at 2.4 in the model penal code.
Well, I know it's
for all
different.
Intents and purposes, there's hardly any
it's
definitions at all.
Oh, yeah, it's much different than the model penal code. Not in New York.
No, well, that's what I mean.
Oh, yeah, and in fact, I,
with our present forgery statute doesn't have any definitions, really. Yeah. 165, 105.
Oh, yeah, this doesn't follow the model penal code in that respect. The definition of written instrument, I said, was substantially the same as the definition of writing that appears. The rest of it follows New York and not the model penal code.
But by making this more lengthy definition, you're taking in bank notes, warehouse receipts, messages, and railroad tickets, and all the various specific items that are covered by separate statutes.
Yeah. Now those would be covered as forgery in the second degree.
You know, I wonder if the legislature in Washington, Southern Pacific have fights up and down this Willamette Valley for 15 years now, whether they should have trains to take them off and so on. So I wonder if the legislature can put some pressure on them by making it a matter of good public policy to forge the railroad tickets.
Well, you know, it's interesting to see their statutes on this. Of course, there are a lot of separate
statutes applying to the railroad, you know. Yeah, I know that. I mean, it's a crime to forge a railroad ticket, but it's not a separate crime to forge a bus ticket.
Or an airline ticket.
No. Also, punishable by 40 years to rob somebody on a railroad train.
Yeah. Forge a theater ticket, which is a lot easier to do.
Well, certainly with respect to these definitions, I would certainly agree that there are other ways to define this crime. There are other ways to set out these definitions. This is and the way in which these are set out is mainly, I don't think so much because New York had a lot of problems in this respect. I think it's because they're trying to take in all these separate ways in which an act of forgery can be, the crime of forgery can be committed. And in defining these terms, they are interrelated. And if we use the definitions that we set out in 4, 5, and 6, for example, then it seems to me have to employ a definition of complete written instrument and incomplete written instrument to make it clear what we're talking about in our subsequent definitions.
Well, I agree that if you just change that, why are you going to have to change the
right, but
4, 5, or 6?
It may well be overdefined, but I think that.
Well, one of the criticisms of the law on the part of a non-lawyer, and one of the reasons I think a lot of people tend to fear the law and courts and judges and attorneys and things like this because they're unfamiliar with it. Because it's expressed in terms they have a hard time understanding and dealing with. I generally don't share their fear, except I think I can see how it arises. Go through it and find out what forgery is, and then find out the next line down that there's a difference between a complete written instrument and an incomplete written instrument as far as the crime is concerned. And I think most people would tend to think that forgery is forgery. Sign somebody's name to something, or get him to sign something that he shouldn't be signing, or doing any one of these things. Well, that's a crime. Whether you started out with something that really was a copy of a First National Bank counter check, or just looked like a copy, and somebody had misspelled the word dollars or something like that, and it created.
Well, I think we agree on this. And that's exactly what I was trying to say here. I think that's what New York's trying to say, is that these aren't all forging, and it doesn't make any difference. That it's forgery, either event, whether you complete an incomplete written instrument or you alter one that's already complete, it's still forgery. But they're attempting to enunciate the different ways in which forgery can be committed, although it won't make any difference as far as the penalty or the grade of the crime.
Would your objection be met if we were to go to the last, or go to the period, subsection 1, last clause, and after, I'll read it, which is capable of being used to the advantage or disadvantage of some person, and then delete the period, whether or not completed and fully drawn with respect to every essential feature thereof, period. We're saying the written instrument means any paper document, instrument, or article containing written printed matter or equivalent thereof used for the purpose of reciting, buying, conveying, or recording information or constituting a symbol or evidence of value by privilege or identification, which is capable being used to the advantage or disadvantage of some person, comma, whether or not completed and fully drawn, respect every essential feature thereof, period. Now, that possibly covers a lot of ground with respect to 2 and 3 and eliminating and uses the word completed, so by reference, I would think you would have to change 4 and 5. But
basically to it.
No.
And we're not going to do anything basically to it. And I don't argue the point greatly. I can live with it either way. If we're not going to do it greatly, why, I suspect then that the way Don has done it is perhaps the best way. It's definite, precise, and a little bit shorter.
According to New York, they say that from these examples here that it covers every conceivable form of forgery. What do you think about this, Bruce?
I think I agree with Bob's last sentiments there. Either way, I can't see any thing lost, though, by combining 2 and 3 as you suggested.
May I make a suggestion on that? With it separated like this, I've been wondering, for instance, if man forges, he endorses a check, forges the name of the payee. Now, is that a complete instrument or isn't it? And what I'm wondering is, when you have them separately stated like this, does this compel the prosecutor to make an election whether or not he's going to charge the man with something in respect to a complete written instrument or an incomplete written instrument?
Frame his indictment in line with the statute.
Right, and he's got to make an election. For instance, if what the man does is forges the payee's name, now is this doing something to a complete instrument or is this completing
right.
incomplete instrument?
It's a good point.
Well, if you put them together, as you have suggested, that would seem to me like it would eliminate that question. It doesn't make any difference in charging. Complete or incomplete instrument. He did something to it that was forgery. Why that?
Did then and there forge a complete written instrument by then and there endorsing the name of John Jones, and the defense attorney argues demurs.
Why do you have to charge if it's written like that? Why do you have to charge it was a complete written instrument? Did then and there forge a written instrument?
Well, if it's separated, you could say that it's taboo to make more definite and certain in a criminal case, but you could demur on the grounds that it's vague. It doesn't state it with certainty, and insofar as the statute provides that it be written. Complete written or incomplete written, and we don't.
It doesn't make any difference.
Question in mind that Justice Sloan has. we make a final judgment with respect to this definitional section, let me bring up one other point, Don, and then we can come back to this. We're talking about forgery. And of course, we all know what forgery is. Now, historically, uttering has been a separate crime. It embodies a separate concept for forgery, a separate statute. Uttering is the passing or attempting to pass of the forged instrument. Did you anticipate this when you included uttering in the definitional section? And it's unrelated to the other eight or the other seven subsections.
Well, first of all, I don't think it's so clear, and I think maybe Justice Sloman probably want to comment on this, but a reading of the Swank and Doherty cases, I think there is some question as to whether it is a separate crime or not. As far as the statutes now, it's the punishment's the same for uttering as it is for forging. Probably the bulk of your prosecutions in forgery cases would ordinarily be brought under the uttering rather than the forging.
Part of proof of forging itself.
Yeah.
But isn't uttering part of the function of I get a whole bunch of payroll checks and rock, work them all over, and then I say, all right, now Bruce, you take these three over to Wagner's grocery store and get them cash, and then you take them over to Erickson's grocery store and get them cash, and you take them over to Safeway grocery store and get them cash and come back and split the proceeds. I've done the forgery and you've done the uttering.
You've done one of them.
I've done both of them, by
hand
to you.
Yeah.
But you're not guilty of forging. All you've done under these definitions, sure, that's a possible uttering. Isn't that the reason for it?
Well,
is that the basic reason for including them as a separate?
Yeah, well, for one thing, from a policy standpoint, the damage that's done, the society is the same. Our legislature up to now has looked at them as equally serious, and whether or not you agree or disagree with the rationale of the Swank and Doherty cases that I didn't feel that this draft changed the legislative intent there, but it would clarify the case law, and that this would just be another way of committing forgery, which is really, when you read the Oregon statutes now, I mean, that's really what you've got. I mean, it's really just another way of committing forgery.
You put two statutes in at once.
Right.
Well, let's see.
Section 2.
You say that it's really just another way of committing forgery.
Well, here in Section 8.4, I think a person commits a crime of forgery in the second degree if with intent to injure or defraud, he makes it or utters it. Yeah, and also it doesn't matter what
time
or something matter when the work complete.
Yeah, the typewriter must be lost.
Miller, you had a bad day.
Too easy. Well, I didn't proofread those.
Now 165.115, uttering a forged instrument, although it's set forth in a separate section. He's punished the same as the forger. The punishment's the same. But where you get into the difficulty and where these questions that have come up in the Doherty and Swank cases, you see, 165.115 says that if he utters any of these instruments specified in 165.105, well, then they set forth certain kinds of instruments that are the subject of forgery. And this is what caused the difficulty, I think, in this later Doherty case. That purposes of defining the crime of uttering, it seemed to me that to combine uttering in with forgery would retain the intent of the legislature to make it punishable the same.
Okay.
And if we're going to punish it the same, why call it a separate crime? Why not just say this is another way of committing the crime of forgery?
You're oversimplifying. Because follow that rationality, say armed robbery and burglary have the same punishment, therefore why call them separate crimes? But they're interrelated offenses, and the Oregon court has said
that in one case that they are separate, distinct crimes, but on the other hand, they said that it's a single crime. That's case.
Well, it's a continuing. In that one case, it was a continuing transaction, wasn't it?
But the defendant committed only one crime when both courts did another. Is that what he said?
Right. They said that this clearly states that a single crime can be committed either by forging the instrument or uttering it or both.
That was what one?
That's Dougherty versus Platt. See, what had happened on these statutes, see, which was OCLA 23560, in 1953, when ORS was compiled, this section was then split and made into 165105 and 165115. They made two separate statutes out of it.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. And
it formerly was one separate.
Right, under OCLA, right.
The reason for splitting it, that's relatively recent. Federal law is split 15 years.
Well,
that's what I was thinking. It always constituted was one.
Well,
I think from a foreign policy standpoint, it's not going to make much difference what you do, whether you actually go out and write the other guy's signature on it, or whether you pass it at the grocery store, knowing that it's been altered by somebody else, it's equally reprehensible.
And you adopt the other fellow's act as your own.
Yeah.
Well, going back to still in the definition section, still talking about uttering, I'll consent to leaving the definition or defining uttering there. I'm looking at 165, 115. Before we get this business is true and genuine. What about the intent part of that? Now I know you cover intent in section 2, both in the preface and in the preface. But
intent to injure, defraud.
Right, but.
Case of uttering, you'd also have to show that by uttering an instrument that he knows to be forged.
Well, don't we get into the thing I raised before? Don't you have to make the provision that he utters it as true and genuine, an instrument which he knows to be forged? Because he could come in and he could say, well, sure, I knew that was forged and I uttered it, but I didn't represent that it was true and genuine. Nobody asked me.
Good. If he knew that it was false and he didn't say so.
And yet it was intent to injure?
Yeah.
Well, you know, the present statute says, knowing the utterance of poetry, says, as true and genuine, and he forged instrument.
Well, I mean, then the bank before it takes any place, we have to ask for a swearing that every check in the thing is true and genuine.
Just tendering the check is sufficient. That, even under a present law, you don't have to prove, for example, that he said this is a good check.
Or that anybody asked.
No. I mean, just tendering it, the payment, or presenting it, is a representation that it's
all right. But the creditors aren't going to have checks anyway.
Well, now, I might mention, too, that with respect to this uttering, now, the New York Code combines uttering with their possession statute rather than with their forgery. But, of course, their previous law was different than our present Oregon law in that regard. And it seemed to me it was rather academic because they equate possession with uttering, and they combine the two in a single statute, but the punishment provisions, the grading of the crime is the same as with their forgery sections anyway. Now, I felt that there would be a good likelihood that when it came to grade these offenses, that we might not feel that possession, in view of our past history and our present law, as that possession should be treated as severely as either forging or uttering. It isn't now. The maximum punishment now for possession of a forged instrument is 5 years. And that's the reason. New York says that one's as bad as the other, but I felt that it's clear from our present law that the standpoint of punishment, it's just as serious to utter the forged instrument as it is to forge it. So I put it in the draft, in with forging rather than with possession.
I agree with that, actually. But New York puts it in here and makes uttering criminal possession in the second degree. And they talk about uttering. They didn't define that.
No, they don't define that.
Well, I think the draft's improved. I've satisfied my own self with respect to the definition of section as is.
I think maybe Justice Stoneman has further comment. Yes, something else on the
No, I already explained it. I looked at this Doherty case.
I'd sure like to hear what you have to say on that.
Well, I just kind of summarily read it, but one thing they point out here is that here the petitioner in this case, the habeas corpus case, had said the statute was unconstitutional and that it gave the magistrate, or the attorney, the opportunity to indict one person for one crime and another person for two. Well, one thing they used in answer to that was that OCLA, under which he was indicted, was just one crime. Well, that doesn't answer completely because that doesn't take into consideration what the revisers did. But they did point out this, that the criminal laws of this state were adopted from those of the state of New York. The making of a forged instrument and the uttering of it by the same person is but a single crime.
Read that again. Yeah.
The making of a forged instrument and the uttering of it by the same person is but a single crime.
In other words, you can't indict me twice if I write out a phone check.
But they can indict two guys.
They can indict two guys.
Two guys. If I write
the example you gave a while ago, you can indict them both of them.
Series of acts that constitute more than one crime.
I should get off the rip off. lot of it is stealing a horse.
Or an airplane.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I made a note when we got to it. Question on that with respect to a separate statutory provision on that. Now, New York does provide a separate section that I didn't put into my draft
Section 1 be approved without amendment.